Hello all, and welcome to the weekly CCG meeting for June 13th. This is the year 2023, last I checked. The topic for today, as posted to the list, is the Bitcoin Ordinals DID method, which should be an interesting topic to discuss. I think there's some great technical merit here, and I am really curious to see the walkthrough of one, how we got here, and two, how it works. So definitely interested in it. With that, I do want to start off the meeting by reminding everyone that there is a code of ethics and professional conduct, and I obviously this, as well as all W3C meetings, are conducted under that code of ethics and professional conduct. So hopefully we won't need any reminders for that during the call. Typically don't, but just have to bring it up. A quick intellectual property note. Anyone may participate in these calls. This is a public call. However, any and all substantive contributors to actual work items must be members of the CCG group, so the W3C credentials community group, with an IPR agreement signed. And I'll put the link to join if you're, for some reason, not a member. You will need a W3 account, for that, but that's free, et cetera, and it can walk you through that. So, as with all of our meetings, notes and meetings will go up to our GitHub, along with the audio recordings, et cetera. We do manage chat via the Jitsi side, which is also linked to IRC, in case you're in via IRC. If you want to type it in, the letter Q followed by the plus sign will add you to the queue. The minus sign after the letter Q will subtract you from the queue. Or you can click raise hand in the Jitsi interface, and that will also put you on the queue. So with that, want to pause quickly. Any introductions, reintroductions? Has anyone changed roles, new job, new role? Or is anyone brand new to this meeting that would like to introduce themselves? I'll pause here. See no one come off of mute. I'm going to also just side note that the transcriber is freaking terrible today, or especially with me. So, with that, I'm going to move on. Any announcements? I know I have one for sure, just for folks to be aware of, but anyone else have any announcements for the CCG today? Watching Q here, not seeing any. I am going to note that if you are a member of the VC working group, you are already aware of this, but if you're not, but do monitor the list, et cetera, a lot of stuff is starting to work its way into horizontal reviews. So this is privacy, internationalization, and tag, et cetera. So there could be changes coming to some of that based on feedback from horizontal reviews. So just be watching that stuff closely if you're implementing on that side. With that, I am going to move us right on into the main agenda here. So we're fortunate enough to have Brian Richter here to talk today about the Bitcoin Ordinals DID method. So basically a DID method that mixes the security idea of blockchains, particularly the Bitcoin blockchain, with ordinal theory. So there is a spec for this, and I'm going to copy and paste that directly into the chat, and then I'm going to just hand the ball to Brian to take it away, and I will be monitoring Q to jump in and ask, put folks on the point to ask questions at appropriate pause stuff. So with that, Brian, over to you.
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Good morning, everyone. My name is Brian Richter. I have a company and I've been involved in this space for a few years now. My company's Aviary Tech. Some of you might know me, some of you might not, but I'm excited today to present to you guys the Bitcoin Ordinals DID method. The spec that Mike linked there is the latest currently, but there's a lot of changes in this slide deck that haven't made it in there yet. So looking forward to moving things forward. So I'm going to share my screen here. Hopefully that'll work. Is that coming through?
You are coming through nice and clear.
Awesome. Yeah. So the did BTCO. Let's start. I don't think this group really needs an introduction to decentralized identifiers. Everyone pretty much knows, I would think. But I want to point out the three properties in the middle there are extremely, you know, very pertinent to Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is very decentralized, as we know. It's persistent. The hash power behind it makes things quite difficult to change, and it's also quite easily resolvable. There's tons and tons of Bitcoin nodes that exist in the world, and basically you can get the data for the SID method from any of those. So let's move on to the meat of this, which is ordinal inscriptions. So what the heck is that? That's a word I've heard before, ordinal, but I don't know how that relates to Bitcoin. I'd say at the end of last year, like maybe December or so, this guy named Casey Rodemore kind of created this theory, ordinal theory, which essentially gives a number, an identifier to every Satoshi in Bitcoin. One Bitcoin can be broken down to, I forget how many, but a lot of Satoshis. So Satoshis are the smallest unit of account on Bitcoin. And essentially using ordinal theory, you can give it each of those Satoshis a number, which the number can be translated to different formats, like the decimal format, which is the block number dot the offset within the block. There's names, which just uses English characters and has a mapping that he's come up with. And then there's a few other formats, like a degree notation, different formats. The one I've been sticking to and using the most is the name version, which kind of gives you possibly a human readable thing. Often it's just random characters, but you can find human readable Satoshi names. So these sats, they are just held in regular Bitcoin wallets. There's nothing special about them. They're just sitting in UTXOs that you control with your private key, and you can kind of look up what Satoshis are included in the UTXO using the ordinal client, which is an index on top of the Bitcoin node that you would also need to be running. So you can transfer these Satoshis. They're just, like I said, regular Satoshis. So you can transfer them just like regular, using regular Bitcoin transactions. The only caveat to that is that you need to make sure that your wallet basically is ordinals aware, because they are regular sats, they can like easily, if a wallet doesn't know about them, will just accidentally spend them as fees, or, you know, if you're trying to pay someone, it'll just pay with them because it thinks that they're just regular sats. And then the most important part to this all is that they can be inscribed with arbitrary data. So this uses, segregated witness taproot, data. And on the right there, you can see the envelope that you essentially kind of, put the data inside of. So there's a push saying just ord, and then another push that tells you the content file type, and then another push telling you the actual content. So this can be just, you know, any sort of content and also any sort of file type that you want. So that's what inscriptions are. They're, yeah, like I said, arbitrary data that's written to the Bitcoin ledger. And, you know, it can be pruned off, but it's also, it exists on all the nodes by default kind of thing. And these are, they're immutably, these data blobs are immutably linked to the sats, the ordinal that you're writing to. You can basically always look up the data that was inscribed to it. And what this does is it creates unique Bitcoin native digital artifacts. So Casey Rodemore outlined what a digital artifact is, and the most, you know, pertinent, most important things are kind of like, they're complete. They're not links to off-chain data. They are, you can hold a artifact and it holds all of the information that's needed about it. And doing all this, you get something that is as durable, immutable, secure, and decentralized as Bitcoin itself, because it is just Bitcoin with some, you know, some layers on top of it, which are embedded in the network. So the current uses that people have come up with is they've been writing just regular images into these inscriptions. A lot of people have just been copy pasting other NFTs and uploading them onto Bitcoin and saying this is an interesting new thing. And, you know, obviously that's nothing special, but, that's what people are doing. They're buying them, selling them. And there's also a naming system. Like a lot of people have come up with these really, pretty dumb protocols, which is just the first person to inscribe a name onto a thing is the one who owns that name, and you can transfer that whoever you want or whatever like that. It doesn't have any of the properties that we want in DIDS, but that's to come. Another thing that's kind of popped up is BRC20, which is a token protocol, like a fungible token protocol on top of this. It's not the best protocol. It's, you know, costs a lot to just be moving tokens around. So it's nothing special, but people are doing it. People are buying and selling these tokens. And yeah. You can also just embed, you know, like a full HTML page on there. So there's, people have uploaded like a clone of Doom, and I think I saw Minecraft and lots of different things. And then some cheeky people, me and my brother, created a couple of verifiable credentials, put some art that he did in there and called them verifiable collectibles, and we, you know, give those to people. There's also, you know, kind of unbounded future possibilities with this. Like, it's just arbitrary data at the end of the day that you can own and buy and sell. So it's interesting to see what people are coming up with. And obviously, as I'm discussing here, an important use case, I think, is putting DIDs inside of these inscriptions. So how do we do that? I'll go through all of the different operations in the DID method. So the first, of course, is the create operation. I wanted to make sure that there was, you know, a few different ways to do it that all kind of work the same. Basically, I want you to be able to upload or inscribe just the full DID document that you want to use. So you could just create a DID document, embed the sat that you're writing it to into the identifier. As you can see on the right there, that one HOJ is the name of that sat. So this DID document is for that sat there. I also want to come up with a compressed DID document format, so to save a little bit of transaction fees, because this is quite a lot of data that you're writing. So it could potentially get quite costly. So compressed format is pretty important. I haven't landed on exactly what to do there, but there's a few different ideas. Like that one on the behind there is the kind of the it's basically DID peer numago 2 with a little bit of a prefix there to kind of point out that it's a DID. I've also thought about maybe using compression like CBOR or Brotli, or I'm not entirely sure yet, but I think there's going to be a good standardized way to do that. I also had a call with one of the Ordinals devs, and he was pointing out that you could also do basically key value stores in here. So that's another possibility, just kind of embedding the keys of the document directly with their values. Possible. So that's how you create. And then when you want to look one of these things up to resolve it, basically you grab the method specific identifier in the top right there. You can see LWML... you look up what UTXO that sat is currently sitting in. You grab that UTXO and you look at what the first sat in that UTXO, the first inscription that you find, because if you've updated, then the current state is the very first sat in there. And then you read that inscription and you find the current state. If that inscription is the null inscription, which I haven't really defined yet, but basically you're saying, I'm deactivating this DID. I'm not going to use it right now. Then it's sitting there as in a deactivated state. You could also, burn this inscription by sending it to a well-known, burn address, and then no one would be able to move it, kind of thing. And that's basically how you look up this current state. So as I alluded to before, to update, basically, you inscribe a new DID document to a new sat, and you transfer along with that the original DID. So the one that people will be looking up has to be sitting in that UTXO, probably at the end of it. And then you can include all the previous states as well. So you can, basically build this package of all of the states that have, happened for your, DID. You could also kind of, compress those states and, you know, take the value out of those previously inscribed states, because there's, at the end of the day, there's sats sitting in there. So there's kind of money. And then, to deactivate, like I said, you can update it to the null inscription, which is, kind of saying like, I'm deactivating this right now, but I might be able to turn it back on in the future. So that's a reversible deactivation. And then there's also, the ability to irreversibly burn the, inscription, the DID. So this, obviously has some advantages and disadvantages, this method. The big advantage that I like about this, and the reason I created it or made it, is that, you know, this is layer one Bitcoin. There's zero counterparty risks. There's, you know, nothing else you need to look up. Everything is within your Bitcoin node, basically. Of course, you need to have the mapping of sats to the, UTXOs, but that can be, derived from the Bitcoin node. So as long as you have a Bitcoin node, you have everything you need, basically. And that, I believe, basically creates the biggest possibilities for network effects in, as far as decentralized ledgers go, because Bitcoin is the most well-known, blockchain out there. It's the first, and it, you know, it's the easiest to get. It's the, easiest to kind of sync, because it's the most, there's the most nodes and most decentralized kind of thing. Of course, that's, has some disadvantages method. So you do want to wait for one block confirmation, I would say, to kind of trust that a DID document, is written and is the current state. So it's a bit slow. Of course, you could just kind of read them from the mempool if you wanted as well, and, assume that it's going to be eventually inscribed. But you know, that's, you have to weigh your risk on it there. Also, because the fees rise as more people use the network, with the way that the current, Bitcoin protocol or Bitcoin network works, is like, there's a fee market basically. So you kind of have to bid for your block space. So, not too long ago, the fees went up kind of a crazy amount. It cost $16 to send a regular transaction. And then these ones that have a bit more data in them, so they would cost even more than that. So at some points it's kind of not really, reasonable to use this method, but for the most part right now the fees are low enough that it's possible to kind of get what you want in. But yeah, so those are the trade-offs. I think, you know, for some use cases the advantages overcome the disadvantages, definitely, but it's kind of, we'll see. So what work is there left to do? I would say, like, the compressed format I mentioned isn't quite ironed out. You know, the burn address and what a null inscription is, there's a few little details I need to kind of work out, and then I want to do another pass of the spec and make sure it's all up to in a great state, and then I have to build an implementation. I haven't quite done that yet. I've done a little bit of the first operation creating. I've created some and put them on the ledger, but I haven't kind of gone through the rest of the operations, but especially because the specification is not entirely ready, I would say. It's a bit more to kind of research. And then once that's ready, I'll make a universal resolver and put this up on allow anyone to kind of resolve these using the universal resolver, so you don't have to run a Bitcoin node, because I don't expect the normal user to want to do that. So so I'd say I'm hoping to get some interest in moving this along. I want to start doing weekly meetings starting on Thursday, I think around 10 a.m. probably. And then this coming week, I'm hoping to have the first one. I've created a Google Meet. I don't really know the organization of where this will be, but I want to start with Google Meet and kind of talk to people that are interested. And I hope you are there. Hope you're interested in coming. So yeah, that's kind of the presentation for today. I have a couple of advanced topics if you guys want me to get into those, or if there's any other thoughts or questions.
Seeing no one on the queue yet, I could start it off with kind of two quick questions. I guess one would be, I'll start with one, actually, since Dimitri just queued up. one would be, are you concerned at all about, transferring someone's identity or sale of identities, et cetera, and things like that?
That's a great question. I've thought about it a little bit. I'm interested in hearing what kind of the consensus for that is. I've heard both sides of it. Like, you should be able to kind of transfer these identities to a different, private key or a different ownership kind of thing and different person. But obviously that has attack vectors of, impersonation and all that. So my original, update mechanism back was slightly different, and a transfer was basically, burning that DID. And I'm not against moving back to that. I want to hear kind of what other people think, but, essentially there's a way we could design this so that, a transfer would end up deactivating, a DID. So you wouldn't be able to kind of sell these things.
Well, Dimitri. Muted.
So my question is there a storage limit per single transaction? I'm not sure I fully understand the ordinal model. So can you talk about how, what the cost per byte is basically, or if there is a storage limit to this method?
Mm-hmm. So there definitely is a storage method. How it works is, I think this, push here with the hello world, if this is too long, I think there's a limit to the amount that you can push in there. So you can, but you can continue to break it up into multiple pushes. However, there is essentially a limit. I think it's around 400K, 300K or something of, a transaction itself, or else it won't be kind of relayed by the Bitcoin network. So there's limitations on that regard for sure. You can't get too large of if your DID document was a megabyte, you wouldn't be able to do that really. But for the most part, it's a reasonable limit. And then as far as the cost, so this is a very extreme case. It's roughly around actually 20 to 30 these days, which is, I would say essentially you should be able to get a compressed form at 20 to 30 set V bytes on there for around 50 cents, a little bit less. But it could go up to five or so dollars. Interestingly, so because this is in the segregated witness data, you actually get it only costs you 25% of the set V byte, pricing, because you get a witness a discount on that, which is kind of funny.
Thanks. Makes sense.
Will.
Hey, yeah, this was interesting. I've also played around a little bit with ordinals. I wondered if you considered offline creation, how this method would support that.
So I haven't thought too deeply about it, but I if you are in control of a sat and you know the name of it or the ID identifier of it, you could definitely create a DID document that, looks like this or whatever. And you could have the sat name in there and stuff. Inscribing it on to the ordinal would obviously make it discoverable. But you would be able to, send this DID document before you inscribe it and kind of, show someone. And then you could also prove ownership over that sat as well. So that's an interesting, idea for sure. You could definitely play around with that.
I think you'd also want the DID identifier to kind of pre-commit to this DID document.
Totally.
Contain the hash of it or something.
Yeah. So interestingly, so the way that the actual ordinal inscription works is there's actually two transactions. There's a commit transaction, which is basically like what you said. It's you're kind of putting the commitment onto the ledger or whatever, and then there's a reveal transaction afterwards that reveals the data and actually embeds the data. So you could just do the commit transaction and go around showing people your document or whatever, and then at some point in the future inscribe it if you want, that kind of thing.
Watching for other questions here. As far as a standardization path, I mean, obviously you've got a good initial spec up on, up on GitHub, et cetera. I mean, have you figured out, is this something you think you want to roll down the diff direction or CCG or something else? Or have you looked at pros, cons, et cetera?
Yeah. So I've a little bit kind of, thought about where to kind of do this work for sure. I do want to make sure that it's open to, it's inviting to people that are in the ordinal space that actually kind of know how this stuff works. It might be kind of, intimidating to kind of get those people to come to the CCG when it's a group that they don't know anything about, or to diff where it's decentralized identity and they're more interested in ordinals and Bitcoin stuff. So I'm trying to figure out where exactly the best place to do that is, and open to suggestions for sure.
Cool. And then I guess the other side, is this something you think that as an approach could be more generalized and have Bitcoin as one potential aspect, but then permit use of other chains? Is that something you've looked at? Because obviously Bitcoin's got some uniqueness as far as like having a set break apart. I think it's 100 million or something to one from a, ratio standpoint of sats to, BTC, but it seems like other chains, even private ledgers, could potentially have similar type properties, right? Is that something you've looked at possibly exploiting?
Yeah, totally. So, really the method, like I'm making sure to make it in kind of like an agnostic way. So that as long as the chain supports ordinals, you can do it. And like, for example, like, there's a Doge ordinals protocol, there's a Litecoin ordinals protocol, and all of them, I don't see a reason why they wouldn't be able to support the exact same thing.
Keith.
Hey, thanks, Bryce. Looks great. Could you explain, I didn't quite follow the update methodology. So like, in particular, like, sorry, I'll just go to the verifiable credential world. Like, I am issued a verifiable credential with this DID, and then a year later, there's an update operation. So I certainly understand, like, in the updated SAT, it can reference the old SAT. But if you were looking at that VC, like, what would your resolver do? Would your, like, I don't think the resolver can't look at all SATs and try to figure out the current state of the, like, how would that work? Maybe I'm just missing something.
Yeah. So, how I think it would work is, so if your resolver, like, the date that you're trying to resolve the DID for, and the resolver could basically look up, at that date, what was the latest block. And, from there, you can query the Bitcoin node for like the most recent, UTXO that SAT was, the SAT in question was transferred in. And find that basically would be like the current state, right? So from that block height that you're interested in, which is you can find from the date, the most recent transfer of the SAT in question. And then you can find the UTXO there and find the first inscription. Does that make sense?
Yeah, got it. So I thought you were creating I thought maybe you lost the connection to the old SAT. Okay. Thank you.
No, yeah. So like, that's the important thing, is like the new state and the initial state are tied together in a UTXO. So I do have a couple of advanced topics here, which I think we did kind of touch on a little bit. The pre-rotation, so the commit reveal transaction format of inscriptions is definitely an interesting thing to play with. Being able to basically commit to a rotation of your DID document, I think is valuable. If you know that your next key is going to be before you make that live, you can kind of commit to it, which is, I'm trying to get to the same sort of idea that Carrie has, I believe. And then the next kind of advanced topic is basically, so because you're doing this update over time, and each of those inscriptions has like an envelope of sats in it, it might be quite a bit of money that you've kind of accumulated into your basically your old states. And you can, at some point, you can basically fuse those back and create money out of them and turn your kind of receipts into money, which is kind of fun. Importantly, like all you really need at the end of the day is the latest state and the initial state to tie those together. All of the other states can kind of be looked at from the previous, looking at the blockchain. And then, yeah, that's kind of the two advanced things I wanted to mention.
So one question, I know you get a bit at transaction time. Because obviously with transaction times being what they are along with costs, this seems like it's something that's going to, not necessarily like a use and burn type idea. I mean, it feels like there are definite use cases attached to this. Have you thought through some of the most valuable use cases for this from a user perspective where it may bring properties that aren't granted by other DID methods?
Yeah. So for me specifically, like I'm really interested in using it, not as like my only identifier, right? But as an identifier that kind of helps people discover my other identifiers, because a lot of the DID methods I've been using, DID key, DID peer and stuff, like there is no discoverability, for them. So basically being able to discover using this big network that exists, Bitcoin, and not having to worry about any other thing in the world is kind of how I want to be able to be found, kind of thing. But yeah, so as far as like use cases and stuff, I it's pretty open. Like it's same as all the other DID methods, I would say. Kind of.
Cool. Harrison.
I have questions in regards to the cost. So earlier you mentioned about commit and reveal. So if you pay when you commit to the transactions, or you pay and then you don't pay when you inscribe the data, or how does the kind of cost works?
Yeah, so you pay for both. The commit is like not very much data. I think it's essentially the hash that you're writing, though, is the only like big data piece that you're putting in the commit. So you do have to pay for both, but the commit is not nearly as costly, but the reveal is where you're actually embedding the data. So that is where the costs kind of get a bit crazier.
Got it. So the bigger the data, the more costly it becomes, basically.
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
Got it. And then how does the update cost work? Like when you update it, basically it's a commit and reveal again, basically, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's the update is relatively the same price as a create, I would say. I haven't ran the numbers or anything on this, but really like what is costly in inscriptions is obviously the inscribing itself. Transferring them after you've inscribed them is a regular Bitcoin transaction. So there's not too much fees associated with that. But of course if you're transferring a whole bunch of the previous states or whatever, you're going to be, it's going to be a bit more data that you're kind of moving. So you're going to have to pay a little bit more, but yeah, essentially you're paying around the same every time you update.
Thank you.
That being said, as long as the current fees are, relatively stable, if they're going through skyrocketing, then you're going to be paying the current market rate kind of thing.
Will again.
Hey, yeah, I wondered if you considered did Ion type CRDT mechanism instead of like every ordinal, every update inscribing a new DID document, kind of just inscribing a set of changes to the previous DID document as a way to reduce the size?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I definitely thought about it. I'm kind of the opinion like that the inscription should sort of be self-contained. Obviously that is more costly, but I think like kind of the ability to just read that one inscription to know the current state is, pretty powerful versus kind of, deriving the state from all of the updates or whatever from the previous inscriptions.
Yeah, totally simpler, right?
Yeah, definitely for simplicity. But then, of course, there's the trade-off. It is more costly, so I don't know. Weighing those pros and cons might be a thing that we should explore a bit more. That's a great idea, though.
Watching for additional questions on the queue here. Any additional kind of unique properties you think are worthy of highlighting or areas of either security concerns or things like that that you may want additional eyes in on from the community side?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, like, I feel like it's probably the same as other DID methods in this regard, but like, if you lose the control of the private key that controls those sats, you are essentially kind of losing control of your identifier, right? I think most DID methods kind of have this property, right? Like that's how private key encryption, cryptography works. But I am wondering if there's mechanisms that should be built in to kind of being able to like signal like this DID has been kind of the control has been lost with this DID. I need to move to this one here, that kind of thing. So Aurea mentions guardianship, custodial recovery, and yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting to is like, is there things that I should think about building into the specification itself in that regard, or should I kind of punt that question?
And I think I'd love to hear Ori's thoughts on the process since he's chatting very nicely on the tech side, because I know he's thought about this issue. So fire away, Ori.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just briefly, like the DID specification doesn't distinguish between updates that are made by the DID controller or updates that are made by the DID method operator under duress or whatever. So like, just be careful with the word recovery. Like Ion and Diff like made it look like the recovery was a DID operation, but it's not. Update is a DID operation. Now, if you decide that you want to delegate update capability to someone you really trust, like your lawyer or your government or your priest, that's your call. And if that's there's a way to cryptographically verify that update operations coming from another party that you delegated to previously, that's a valid thing for you to describe in your particular DID method, but it's DID method specific and it's a variation on the update parameter. And you can build your DID method to expose that capability, or you can choose not to expose that capability because, you know, people can be coerced into giving those rights away. It's sort of like the power of attorney thing. Like, you know, you hear cases of people being convinced to sign power of attorney documents when they weren't really sound of mind. And then, you know, later that causes the problems for them. So you'd be super careful with delegating to parties and making sure that that delegation is happening in a way that's safe. And of course, like, once that delegation has occurred, there's now two points of attack for the attacker. They can go for you, the DID controller, or they can go for any of your guardians and use that as a way of sort of needing to get to you. They can just go straight to your guardian and rotate keys.
That's it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think there's definitely things that need to be thought about that for this did method as well as all did methods, essentially. And then the other kind of question I have for the community, which Mike, you brought up earlier, is like this update method, is this a good approach, do you guys think? Should I move back to like sort of a methodology that kind of limits the ability to transfer these things? Or is this, do you think, gonna work? Dimitri.
Yeah, so my question is, so what does it mean to transfer a BTCO? Is it that you hand over a key to someone, or you're essentially delegating a particular address to a key?
It's like an actual Bitcoin transfer of the sats that the inscriptions are written on. So it's basically like, well, one way would be to transfer the sats to someone, right? Or to a different private key, different address. And then of course the other method would be to give them your address or your private key, which would be the same as any sort of did method.
I see. That makes sense. So in that regard, I don't think you as the did method author should worry too much about trying to prevent that, right? Because at the end of the day, people can always hand over their private keys, right? Like, it's not possible to prevent the transfer of something like a DID, even in theory.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, or he's pointing out in the comments, like, let's not encourage private key transfers. Obviously, we don't want that. But yeah, like, I kind of agree, Dimitri, like, at the end of the day, like, being able to transfer this did state to yourself at a different key or whatever should be a valid use case for sure. So, yeah. To answer your previous question, Ori, it is sort of like buying a house, a specific address. Like that's what the inscriptions kind of, how they work. So, yeah. I think Joe's up for
Europe. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I want to pile on this plus one about not limiting transfers. I think one of the key reasons is Bitcoin is a specific solution to a double spend problem. And unless you're going to allow that, you probably want a less expensive substrate. Like Bitcoin gives you that for a reason and you pay for it. So I think you should allow it. Otherwise you're going to undermine why are we using Bitcoin at all? But I think perhaps some of your concerns about it might be ameliorated if you think about the difference between identifiers and identity. What you're selling is an identifier. The identity is what results from the use of that identifier. And so you don't compromise an identity just because someone transfers an identifier. And I think if you think about the security of your systems in that way, you'll be better off.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great point. Thanks, Joe.
Keith, I think you're up.
Maybe I'm missing something. Like, I would have thought that it doesn't matter in this, well, it doesn't have to matter who is controlling the SAT or who owns the SAT. I would have thought that maybe just in update operations, you would want the signature of the controller of the private key identified in the create operation or deactivate operations. And like, I think that's what's kind of interesting about this. Like, it doesn't matter whose wallet the SAT sits in. But maybe I'm missing something.
No, I don't think you are. So like the key that owns the UTXO that the SAT is sitting in, that the DID document is sitting in, is not related to the DID itself, right? Like it's the owner, it's kind of the owner of the DID, but it's not the keys that are kind of embedded within it. Which was a, you know, relatively deliberate design decision, kind of separating the owner keys from the DID keys was what I was trying to go for there.
And like I thought, because then like a method, I mean, theoretically, a method operator could have a wallet where all the sats sit, but then the controller of the sat could actually direct update operations. Does that make sense, or that's not possible?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's exactly right. So there could even be, you could even have services that are, doing the, kind of like the ownership side, but you could be, telling them what did keys or keys you want in your did document and stuff, right? So the separation there of those concerns is kind of what I was going for. Yeah. Or he points out that, seeing ED25519 keys in a SecP at 256K1 is funny. And I thought so too. And that was the first thing that people commented on when I, brought this up on Twitter was people were like, well, why didn't you use Bitcoin keys inside your DIDs? And I was like, well, I don't have to. So why would I?
Awesome. Well, with that, I'm going to just watch the queue for any last words, questions, comments. And I'll hand it over to Brian just to, for any closing remarks, et cetera, and just wanted to thank you for your time today and thank everyone for great engagement. So,
yeah. Yeah, thanks for coming, guys. Thanks for listening. Like I said, I'd love to get more participation from outside of myself in this DID method. So I'll send out the link to the school meet afterwards and hope to see you guys there.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much. I'm going to stop recording now, and please have a wonderful rest of your week.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.